Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. I'm Fergus O'Carroll in Chicago. Today we start a new series of marketing leadership conversations. Here's a clip from today's episode.
What we were starting to see is we were almost starting to get formulaic with our work. And rather than play to win, we were playing to not to lose. And so we were essentially following rules. Like, for instance, hey, research best practices tell you that the product always has to show up in the first 3 seconds. So that's a mandate. And by the way, that might be true, but it can't always be the rule. And so what we were finding is that some of these formulas or rules were really watering down the creativity. And they were also like essentially having our teams focus on the wrong set of criteria.
That's Sophia Colucci, CMO of Molson Coors. She's joined by David Chriswick, SVP Brand at Orange Theory Fitness, and Sophia Hernandez, Global Head of Business Marketing at TikTok. In this episode, we're going to hear about the impact of Molson Coors' recently completed review of its marketing effectiveness principles, about TikTok's distinct creative needs as an entertainment platform as opposed to a social network, and Orange Theory's challenges of standing out in the in-person fitness studio space post-COVID. I'm joined for the intro to this episode by Connor Archbold, co-founder and CEO of our series sponsor, Tracksuit, the affordable brand tracking system for modern-day brands. Welcome, Connor.
Thanks, Fergus.
Does the modern marketing ecosystem require updated techniques for measuring and understanding brand health? Or is it simply that technology now allows you to offer it as a far more affordable solution?
Technology now allows us, companies like Tracksuit, to have rebuilt the kind of survey methodology from the ground up in a more affordable and but also more approachable and convenient and much more fast way. And so technology is definitely there, but also we're entering this like fourth era of marketing. And era one is like Mad Men era, totally creative, long-term thinking. Era two, digital starting, you know, I think MailChimp is being founded, Salesforce is being founded. Era three is, you know, the likes of Klaviyo and Segment are being founded. It's full tracking of bottom of funnel, ROAS, CAC, click-through rates, and obsession with being able, you know, with attribution. And then era four is actually the best of all of those worlds. So you are going back to creativity, back to full funnel marketing, except you need and require full funnel measurement. And we're delivering that, you know, in an always on dashboard that people are able to log into. They're able to invite their board or C-suite or agencies in. So everyone's singing from the same song sheet. They're able to communicate with the same data, and they're able to see whether what they're doing is working to move metrics like, you know, awareness, consideration, preference, and, you know, what people think and feel about your brand on the sentiment side.
Thanks, Connor. Learn more about Tracksuit at gotracksuit.com. It's the affordable brand tracking solution for modern day brands. So here is episode one in our new series, Brand Leadership. Enjoy. So I'm really excited to start this series off with three very senior marketers who have a really strong understanding of the modern day marketplace and come at it from different perspectives. We've deliberately got a mixture of different categories here because we want different voices, we want different perspectives as we pull this together. So I wanted to start off, but maybe I'll go to, and then here's the challenge, listener, that we have. We have two Sophias on the call today. So we have Sophia C., from Molson Coors, and we have Sophia H. Hernandez from TikTok. So I'm going to have to awkwardly refer to you guys that way. If I screw it up, you guys can give me a break for it. But let's start off with Sophia C. from Molson Coors. Sophia, tell us about your sort of product category and what the kind of the key marketing challenges are that you face today.
In terms of the portfolio that I get to work on, our team, it's Molson Coors beverage company. So we're one of the biggest brewers in the world in North America. And I oversee marketing for all of North America. And that's for a portfolio that is comprised of really diverse beverages from our core brands, brands like Coors Light, Miller Lite, Coors Banquet, our above premium portfolio with brands like Blue Moon, which is relevant today, specifically with the Eclipse.
I saw your ad, by the way, this morning. You guys have got a little promo piece out.
Yeah, the team did some fun things around that. And we do a lot of that, which is driving our brands and culture. And then we also have a big flavor portfolio with brands like Simply Spiked and Doble Chico and Vizzy. So, you know, what we really do is we've tried to diversify. We've moved from being a beer company to a beverage company in the last number of years and really diversifying into things beyond beer. And then in terms of the key marketing challenges, like everyone, like in a lot of consumer packaged goods companies and segments, consumer habits are changing. And so we need to think beyond what traditionally got us to success and try to think about how do we attract new legal drinking age consumers into things beyond beer. Like without a doubt, that is our biggest challenge that we have been really addressing. And then obviously all of the other things that we're going to talk about today, which is just the changing media landscape and how we make sure we have really creatively effective marketing out there.
So is it that beer consumption has decreased amongst that particular emerging age group, or is it something different than that?
Yeah, no, good question. Like what I would say is over the last number of years, there's probably like a bunch of macro forces that are coming. Number one, within alcohol, when people are choosing alcohol, they have evolved to things beyond beer. So whether it's, you know, whether it's spirits, whether it's things like more flavored hard seltzers, all of that has been a big driver in the last, you know, decade. Then the next step is beyond that, things like cannabis, other options like that have also started to encroach on our territory. And then the final thing is, yes, like people are drinking less and less. So it's evolved from, you know, just dry January to multiple times of the year, whether it's dry July or sober October, there is a lot of sober curiosity. And we are definitely seeing it more with that younger Gen Z consumer. All of that being said, you know, whether it's launching products like Blue Moon Non-Alc, you know, we have a Coors non-alc proposition, Peroni 00. We're tackling it head on, as well as also coming up with solutions in the non-alc space too. So it's a combination of multiple factors.
So David, we've had Orange Theory on before. We did an episode with Nigel Carr a couple of years back. And the way that the category was there and the challenge that you guys faced, this was all pre-pandemic, you know, how does in-person community influence motivation? That was kind of at the heart of it, is because of the nature of your studio. Of course, you would have been enormously impacted by COVID given the in-person aspect of the brand. How are things today, and what are the challenges you guys are facing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's many industries hit harder by the COVID lockdowns, of course, and the in-person gyms and studios. It was really, really tough, and the recovery has been hard for everyone. You know, getting back to full strength is not easy, and it totally changed the game because, of course, consumer behaviors in fitness has changed as a result of it. You know, people pivoted and haven't quite pivoted back to what was normal. So, of course, there's more working out at home because of the likes of Peloton and Apple Fitness really leading the way there. Finding an edge now in terms of positioning and new ways to stand out, that's it's never been more challenging. So that's kind of what I'm working on right now. But we do have a great product. It's been around for 14 years. We've got over 1,500 locations globally. So we have got a product that gives us a good base. It's hard to copy because we do have a lot of kind of proprietary technology in there that makes things personalized, and it's a very connected studio. So we're confident moving forward, but yeah, it has been a struggle for all, you know, ourselves, a corporate, and of course our network of franchisees.
Is it mostly about bringing people back to that experience, or is it bringing new people into that experience?
Both. I think, you know, one thing that hasn't changed is that fitness is a very leaky bucket. You know, there's a lot of people come in and out of it. So, you know, we do win back a lot of people, but whether that's because of COVID or just the journeys that people are on. I think both we look at as well. So, you know, it's I feel that most of the recovery of getting people comfortable with in-person fitness is you know, we're well along on that front. But getting people in and sticking with it because of the nature of the fitness journey, that's a big challenge for us. It's always ongoing.
And Sophia H, when you look at TikTok for Business, what's the key marketing challenges that TikTok for Business is chasing? Is it a challenge or is it an opportunity, do you think?
Hey, first of all, thanks for having me. I know I'm bringing a slightly different perspective from the two marketing leaders on the call, Sophia and David. It's an opportunity for sure. We've been around for 5 years, which I know is hard for people to really kind of digest. It feels like we've been around so much longer because we have over a billion people using TikTok across the globe. And I'd say the opportunity is in helping marketers and businesses of all sizes really understand how to lean into TikTok to help drive their businesses. It's a video entertainment platform, not a social media platform. And the diversity of our audience scale really means that brands and businesses of all sizes, whether you're a, you know, mom and pop shop in Texas or, you know, a global brand, you can find your audience on this platform and really connect with them in very unique ways. And so for me, the opportunity is helping marketers really understand that their audience is on the platform, whether the brand is or not, and figuring out how to connect with them authentically.
So it surprises me that we as an industry need to be told that, because I mean, I'm thinking, who doesn't know about TikTok? Is it sort of a challenging pitch? Because the brand is all a buzz and obviously is, I think, viewed as pretty much the leading social platform.
Yeah, I think what the challenge has been is it's another platform for people to learn, right? And what we've found is, you know, over the past few decades, and I'm sure Sophia and David are, you know, very aware of this, but over the past few decades, we started to lean into data-driven creativity, and we started to get very comfortable with, you know, the digital platforms and formulaic ways of building creative for those platforms. And then TikTok came in to the world and said, we actually want you to be creative again. We don't want things to be perfect. We actually welcome authenticity and imperfection. We want you to create things. And that, I think, has been a challenge for marketers because, you know, we are definitely accountable to driving ROI and, you know, have to let the CEO and CFOs that we report into know how our activities are really driving impact. And so it's a new story to tell. We really encourage brands to partner with creators to get their foot off the ground. And it's just newness. And I think anytime there's something new, it takes time for people to really kind of lean into it and master it.
There is a lot of conversation about what works and what doesn't work, and a lot of conversation about the value of paid media. And I'm just curious, from such a large brand and the brand portfolios that you run, how is it different than it was a few years ago? And what are you sort of most uncomfortable with right now?
If I take a step back, you know, if you look at our overall media approach, we definitely have significantly evolved how and where we reach consumers. So traditionally in the past, as you can imagine, it was very much like in television, and we've really shifted more towards digital and social media. And so a big portion of our media spend goes there. And while it is like while we can track it, we can measure it, it's not quite as easy as the traditional approaches we had with television before. But I am, you know, we have a great performance marketing team that uses things like MTA for us to be able to really understand the effectiveness of our creative on those platforms. And so that's been a big help. But it's interesting, going back to Sophia H's point, as new platforms and new things show up, we have to continue to shift and make sure that we can show that there's a strong ROI behind them. So I think like that's one piece where like we haven't abandoned television. Like we definitely do still look at, like, it is a really, it's a really good way for us to reach broadly consumers, but we do it in places where it makes sense, where there's more of a captive audience. So if you think about how we advertise on brands like Coors Light or Miller Lite or Blue Moon, it's during live sports where people are more prone to not change the channel and possibly pay attention. So that's where, whether it's like NFL is huge for us, March Madness right now, obviously in the summertime, whether it's things like baseball or the Olympics coming up, that's really where we spend the majority of our traditional paid media, because it's really where it's most effective.
Is it difficult for you as a head, as a CMO, to feel that you need to give over some control of the brand and the brand message and how it's interpreted? Is that tough for you to do? Is it something that you're able to track and understand? Or is it something you just have to be willing to give over when you're in either partnerships or you're working with influencers?
Yeah, we are really deliberate and purposeful in terms of how we think about that approach. So we always start from strong brand strategies, strong activation guidelines in terms of, you know, what is the brand, what's its purpose, how do we want it to show up? And so we always like start with a really, really good brief. Then, you know, what we try to do is we really try to make sure that we're being smart about how we control the messaging, but then also make sure it feels authentic. So for instance, like we actually have an in-house agency, Volt, that manages all of our social media. And they're wonderful because they do partner with our ATL agencies. And so that does provide a lot of control. One, they're awesome and they're really creative, but two, they understand our brands. So that really helps a lot. From an influencer perspective, you know, we obviously need to embrace working with influencers. We love it. And we also want to make sure that they are authentic and they're saying things that are true to them. And so what we do is we really do rigorous vetting, and we make sure that it's an influencer that feels right for our brands, that actually, you know, drinks our products, and that we would feel proud of it, you know, when they come out and they talk about our brands. And so they obviously, like, there's guidelines, but at the same time, it's really the upfront vetting. That's the most important part, I would say. And then the second thing is obviously, you know, there are checks and balances. We do put controls in place. We're constantly monitoring and listening. So I think I've heard sometimes CMOs say, or marketers say, hey, it's about letting go. And you know, I think it's more about just making sure you really understand your brand. You're partnering with people that are right for your brand, and then you have the right processes along the way.
So, David, for you, for Orange Theory, I see it a lot in Peloton, and I see it a lot in Orange Theory, this idea of influencers and certainly instructors at the studio.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they really have become communities in and of themselves, influencers in and of themselves. Has that organically happened, or is that part of your deliberate strategy to use them as reach vehicles?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're probably one of the most important cornerstones of our brand experience. And, you know, admittedly, I don't think we're doing enough with them yet. And just identifying them out there, and who we could leverage and what for, I think is something we're currently working on. But yeah, you're right. I think, you know, Peloton, Apple Fitness, they're all kind of leading the way there in terms of how they create these celebrities out of their coaches and their, I think we right now, to Sophia's point, you know, it's, we have to be comfortable letting go of our brand, because our brand experiences actually are set by, of course, what is happening out there in the field. You know, we have a network of, you know, 200, 300 franchisees of all different sizes. Each of those have their own social channels as well, and kind of build in small micro communities. And so the question for us is, how can we have some sort of guardrails, and without being over controlling, because we know that, you know, if we try and control the brand from the central place, we'll actually probably fail in the long run. So how can the analogy we're using at the moment, and I think borrowed from some conversations that perhaps Tom Morton at RGA was leading, but brand as an operating system, you know, so actually we are seeing all the people, whether partners or influencers, but certainly our network and including our coaches, as they're essentially developers of our brand. And so how can we provide an operating system that gives them the guidance, but also the inspiration and the empowerment to kind of help us with that brand experience?
I remember from the first episode I did on Orange Theory, there was this conversation around the role of brand v performance. So there was a lot of investment in performance marketing. There was a discussion and sort of debating back and forth on the brand and how you needed to find a balance. Is that still the case? I mean, I know you're in recovery, but we're 2 years, two, 3 years, what would be three, maybe 2 years post COVID. Are you finding that you need to lean more towards brand or find a better balance?
Yeah, we're still on that journey. I think we are on the same journey that, you know, some of the well-publicized brands like Airbnb and Adidas, ASOS, you know, they've all come out and said that they were too heavy in performance. We're certainly there ourselves. You know, we lean heavily on performance because we are, at the end of the day, we need to generate leads on a quarterly basis for our studios. And it is hard. It's a tough conversation. We know we need to get better, and we're making strides now to get that balance better again, because we have seen the benefit of a consistent investment in top of funnel, long-term future demand creation. But you know, it's easy to slip back into it. You know, you're having a tough quarter and you need a good closeout. You know, it's you switch on the lower funnel stuff.
So, Sophia, are there ways that you see people doing things right now? I mean, for example, fit for format just seems to be a huge challenge in social. Are you seeing that also, where it's not the right creative application, and that's part of the educational process that you need to take people along?
Yeah, I think what we have been really focused on is helping brands understand the creative opportunity that exists on TikTok for them. And I mentioned earlier that we, as marketers and brands, we're either very focused on above the line and a combination of that and digital. And digital had become very kind of quantitatively driven, especially when it came to creativity. To TikTok entering the space and really saying, like, and challenging brands to step out of their very safe kind of guidelines that they've built and lean into creative bravery. And so I loved what Sophia and David said about, you know, instilling these checks and balances, and that which kind of allow you to be more flexible and creative. And I've seen brands that have a very strong brand identity start to experiment with, I don't know if it's a brand rooted in, you know, science, a beauty brand rooted in bringing their beauty message to life via the science, the before and after, start to lean into humor. That's what TikTok has done. And what we're encouraging brands to do is really embrace creativity in a really brave way and start to step out of their comfort zones. I think the biggest challenge, honestly, is not stretching creatively, but it's doing so in real time. So what we see on, you know, with the TikTok community is a true reflection of what's happening, you know, on the pulse of culture. And if brands really want to be a part of that, then they need to be on the platform, listening to their audiences, listening to what they're listening to, how they're behaving, et cetera, and figuring out how they can be a part of that, but doing so quickly. And I think that is the biggest barrier. And what we're doing to address that is starting to build innovative products that help deliver creativity in real time and at scale.
And what's an example of a product?
Well, there are some that I can't talk about yet, but we'll be launching them later this year. But one is like the TikTok creator marketplace. And this is really the simplest way to describe it is it's like, you know, like matchmaking for brands and creators. So you put in a bunch of your inputs, what you're looking for, you know, to David's point, like who feels like the right partner for you and your brand. And it'll spit out tons of recommendations. So just things that feel more turnkey that way to help enable and empower brands to lean into the platform.
We'll be right back. This series is brought to you by Tracksuit, a beautiful, affordable, and always-on brand tracking tool that helps you answer the question, is what we're doing working? A not-so-secret fact is that companies pay $100,000 or more for brand tracking, which is out of the question for modern brands whose budgets are under pressure. Tracksuit has been built by marketers for marketers and makes brand tracking 10 times easier and 10 times more affordable. Their research experts do the heavy lifting by using best-in-class practices to craft the questions and get your survey live. Tracksuit surveys thousands of people each week from panels of millions around the world to give you full visibility of your brand health in 30 days with insights updated for your brand daily. Tracksuit is fast becoming the common language for marketers and agencies to measure, understand, and communicate the value of brand building. Check them out at gotracksuit.com. That's gotracksuit.com. Now back to the show. To the issue of creative effectiveness, tell us about your journey. You've worked with James Herman. It seems like it's such a critical aspect. We talk about it an awful lot on this show and about effectiveness and about creative effectiveness. What's that journey been like? What initiated that journey that you've undertaken in recent months?
That's where, you know, we partnered up with James and a number of folks in the last 6 months as we think of how do we want to think about creative effectiveness and using creativity as a superpower to build our brands. And so, you know, we worked on this, not just in isolation. We actually brought in all of our agency partners, cross-functional partners within the organization. And our goal is, you know, case for case, we want to be the most creatively effective beverage marketer in the world. And that's really intentional just because we're not the biggest beverage company. But, you know, if you think about what we're selling, we definitely want to be the most creatively effective. And, you know, we had some great, like it was a journey that we went through where we talked to all of our agency partners. You know, we had surveys across the organization and we really wanted to get down to like, what is preventing us from getting even better? And one of the things that we actually realized, which is interesting, just given some of the points that Sophia H was making, is that while we are very creative and we've embraced creativity, we also didn't have a very clear definition of what creative effectiveness was. And because of that, if you think about all of the marketers in our organization, they're really smart people, but some of them, not everyone has all of that experience. And you need to build your gut for creativity. And so when you don't have essentially a definition of what great creative is, what ends up happening is you go to things that are measured and you go to research and you go to testing. And oftentimes it's about, you know, more bottom of the funnel analytics or things like, hey, you know, like we test things in neuro or we do things like we use multi-touch attribution and people know what it takes to succeed in those things. So rather than building up their own creative muscle, they were like essentially people we started to rely on winning the research game. And that's not good either. And so one of the things we decided to do is we've created our own definition for creative effectiveness, and it's an acronym and it's MUSCLE. And it stands for, you know, looking at creativity and looking at creative work and looking through it in the lens of, is it magnetic? Is it unexpected? Does it tell a simple story? Is it simple? Is it crafted brilliantly? Does it connect to your long-term platform? And does it capture the essence of the brand? And, you know, we've socialized this across our entire organization of marketers, not just in the US, but in Canada, Latin America, Europe. And it's something now that is, we're going to be relentless with it because we really believe that in order to strengthen that gut, it's about building that muscle. And so with that, you can actually essentially strengthen the art of marketing so that we're not as reliant on the science. They're both important, but we needed to get to a better definition.
Was that a recognition that the work that was going out, I think you've touched on it here when in some of your research, you're almost like tweaking concepts to make them acceptable rather than making them magnetic and memorable?
Correct. And look, what I would say is this. In some cases, we have a lot of these things that they're called creative brand acts. We are actually, I think the teams, because there was maybe less at stake, the teams are a little bit more willing to take risks, which is great. Where we were starting to get challenged is when you think about the creative work that we're putting out there, like the big, powerful campaigns, or even things like we have these brand acts, like, you know, times and culture, like, for instance, like we do things like for Miller High Life, it's a dive bar brand. So we launched a Miller High Life gingerbread dive bar for the holidays. I mean, I have so many fun examples like that. Those are good. But the thing is, what we were starting to see is we were almost starting to get formulaic with our work. And rather than play to win, we were playing to not to lose. And so we were essentially following rules. Like, for instance, hey, research best practices tell you that the product always has to show up in the first 3 seconds. So that's a mandate. And by the way, that might be true, but it can't always be the rule. And so what we were finding is that some of these formulas or rules were really watering down the creativity. And they were also like essentially having our teams focus on the wrong set of criteria. And when the right set of criteria is actually the elements of muscle. And, you know, and by the way, like magnetic, like it is, it's going back to Sophia H's point. It's about having like the creative make you feel something. Is it making you laugh? Is it making you, you know, think? Is it making you cry? And by the way, a lot of our work is supposed to make you laugh because we're beer brands and that's great. But, you know, like really
do you still actually pretest now given this new filter?
We do, but the way that we've coached our teams to think about it is that in the past, our teams would think about pre-testing as the decision maker, whereas now testing is more of an inform or consult, and muscle is the decision maker. So if in pre-testing, you know, if we're doing neuro pre-testing or if we're doing focus groups, like, the change now is the teams are empowered to use those as a point for consideration, but not the end all and be all rule. And we actually have seen a big shift as well.
So Sophia H, this sort of, I'm kind of thinking it's sort of a lack of confidence in paid media, traditional sort of paid media, has very much been rooted in the emergence of social. So for you, is it about equally sort of educating people and getting people to understand how best to perform for paid social as well as partnerships and working with influencers?
First of all, a plus one to almost everything that Sophia C was saying. Same comment, Sophia. I'm like, you know, emojiing while you're talking. But I do think that what we're seeing is the lines between brand marketing and performance marketing investments are blending, right? And part of this is the evolution of media, but it's also the evolution of how our audiences are behaving and where they're going with that behavior, right? So what we're seeing on TikTok is a brand, for instance, like Gatorade will invest in our high visibility branding solutions like a Top View to drive product launch. But then they're also driving actual purchase in the same campaign through our shop ads solutions. And so it's really about not thinking, evolving from our traditional ways of thinking about paid media. We also are seeing a lot of success in a brand behaving in a very organic way. And that's something that as an industry, we kind of said goodbye to back in the early Facebook days, but we're seeing a lot of organic activity from brands and audiences really resonating with that. So I think we're at a very kind of a point of evolution in the industry in how we think about our media mix model. And Sophia gave a lot of examples of how, you know, even something like pre-testing, which we used to really hang our hat on as brands, is now more and is more informative, but not the final decision.
One of the things that we've talked about in this show an awful lot is marketing effectiveness, and the concern that I've had, and I find comfort in what you're saying is happening at Molson Coors. I've been concerned that there isn't enough of a conversation happening around marketing effectiveness, the principles of marketing effectiveness. Like, it's interesting, Sophia, that you're working with James Herman. Mm-hmm. James Herman is from New Zealand. I struggle to find voices in the U.S. who are advocating for this in the same way as I see Bennett and Field, as I see Byron Sharp and Ehrenberg Bass, as I see James Herman. Are you guys seeing that? Are you guys building capabilities internally to sort of replicate some of those principles? How are you sort of building that strength of effectiveness in your cultures?
Yes. You know, I when you ask that question, to me, I don't see another choice, because I feel like maybe I'm surprised as you are as well, too, because given just the scrutiny that is on overall marketing budgets and yes, just the pressure that we have as marketing leaders to deliver, if you don't have a clear focus around creative effectiveness, then you're in trouble. So I think that it's so important. And you know, we like to say, like, we love creativity, but we like it even more when it sells beer or when it sells our beverage products. And so I do, I think it's really important to have that continued focus. But I think the reality is we have to think of the right principles, and we also have to think of the right KPIs. And so, you know, if you think of just even the story I told you on the journey that we've been on recently, a lot of those principles that I talked to you about in terms of building that, creative muscle and what those acronyms stand for, they're actually very much rooted in a lot of the principles that you mentioned around whether it's Les Benet or whether it's Byron Sharp. We have actually, for the last number of years, we subscribe to Byron Sharp. He has like a ton of resources, and we're actually members of that to be able to educate our marketers. Les Benet, you know, he's a part of Adam and Eve, and we a lot of the things that we built with DDB, we presented at Cannes last year, and we talked a lot about the principles that Les Benet has when you think about creative effectiveness, whether it's leveraging emotions, feelings, and associations, making sure that we have, you know, that mass appeal, that the creative needs to connect with both our core and attract new drinkers to help grow brands. So much of that is embedded in this framework that I mentioned around muscle, because it goes back to, it's not about creativity just for the sake of it, or frankly, to win awards. It's about creativity that sells product. And so I think, you know, even if you look at just the journey that we've been on, whether it's like making it magnetic so that it actually like evokes feelings for people, the L, making it connected to a long-term platform. I think there's brands out there that have done wonderful jobs on that, whether it's McDonald's, whether it's Snickers, you know, that's what we're trying to get to. And I think that we're definitely on our way. So I feel, you know, very passionate of how important this is. And I also think this goes back to the measurement around it is really important too. And we need to be making sure that we have the smart measurement along the way. So, you know, we look at things like brand health, and brand health is one of the big long-term KPI platform, like KPIs that we look at. And then we look at the effectiveness of our creative, but we are also careful to make sure that it goes back to the point I made. Like, we believe in research because it's important to continue to gut check ourselves, but it's one data point. So going back to the point that you're making, the push around creative effectiveness is so important, and the conversation around it. And look, I anticipate that in the next number of years, it's going to become even bigger. I've seen it even just as a marketer. I've seen it in the last couple of years become more of a buzzword. And I think it's just going to become something critical that other companies and brands recognize is like something that they have to do.
Is there conversations that are happening amongst the networks that you guys are involved in about the need to invest so much in TV spots? And while maybe there's the maybe we can do so much more with those larger production budgets if we were to do them in different environments such as TikTok. I mean, there's these different formats require a different creative approach, a completely different attitude. Sophia H, is part of this the idea that you can get to success with for a lot less money from a production perspective?
There's definitely a sense that being less overproduced is the way to go, especially on our platform, only because that's what the community did with it. We gave the world a tool to use, and you know, the people really took over and started creating things that other people loved to watch. And so when they tell brands like, come and be a part of this, they want brands to participate in that way. State Farm is a brand that actually decided to shift their efforts from Super Bowl to TikTok exclusively, and they got double the reach. So we're seeing a lot of evolution of how brands are coming to life on this platform. I don't think it's an either or. I think we're far from, you know, not thinking in a TV first, mentality. But I do think marketers are starting to really think about how they diversify, again, their media plans and how they're connecting in a unique way with their audiences.
How about at Molson? How are you guys thinking about that? Production budgets and various creative executions fit for different platforms?
I think there's a few things. For starters, and I mentioned it earlier, we have shifted a big portion of our media spend to social and digital, like outside of TV. I mean, we spend more on social and digital than we do on TV, as like for starters. So that's big. And it was probably the reverse 5 years ago. And so that's been a big evolution for us. The second thing is, if you think about just the production efficiencies, the way we like to think about this, and this goes back to having a really strong brand platform that feels connected across all different consumer touch points. So whether it's, you know, for Coors Light, Choose Chill, for Miller Lite, Tastes Like Miller Time, what we really try to do is make sure we have something cohesive.
And that wasn't the case before. That surprises me.
I would say that before it's not that the teams didn't have long-term platforms, but I don't think they were being connected through all different consumer touch points, and in particular social media. And so I think social media or digital, like the approaches there might have been a little bit more random, whereas knowing how important they are, we need to be really strategic. So I think that's another one that's important. And then I think from a production efficiency perspective, look, like we are obviously, if we're putting together a Super Bowl commercial, we are going to spend the money on it. But I will say, if you look at the dollars that we've spent on production in the last number of years, what we have found is like there's different ways that you can be efficient. One, we used to create a ton of assets for television. And what we found is that we probably didn't need as many, because I think that we probably underestimated like how many times we needed to actually show a spot before it wore in. And so that's been really big for us, because then we've been able to take those dollars and actually put them towards different like channels and vehicles, whether it's social media, you know, digital, that are more specific to those channels. So I think that's important. We've looked at how do we think of the different assets that we want to put out there and work with different agency partners or our own internal agencies to be more efficient. So I mentioned it earlier, we have an internal agency, Volt, and they actually build a lot of our content, our organic content, the things that we put in social, and they do it in a really authentic way. Going back to Sophia H's point, like showing up the way people want to see us on those platforms is really important.
It is Sophia Colucci, CMO North America from Molson Coors here in Chicago. David Criswick is SVP Brand and Communications for Orange Theory Fitness. And Sophia Hernandez is Global Head of Business Marketing for TikTok in New York. Thank you, all three of you, for your time this afternoon and for being here on the show.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will see everyone on the next episode.